Okay, welcome back. We are on agenda item G, the zoning use table update. Liz and Angie.
All right. Well, I'll get us started this evening. So this is the second work study session for the Planning Commission in preparation for the public hearing scheduled for September 21st on the zoning use table update. So tonight we're going to walk through starting with economic development considerations with this update and any specific questions the Planning Commission may have based on their review of that portion of the proposed amendments, in addition to making the code easier to use. And then at the end, if there are any additional questions on housing equity and diversity, because we did focus primarily on that during the first work study session, we're happy to answer any additional questions on that topic tonight. So just kind of as a reminder, the primary goal of the zoning use table update is to reduce barriers to investment in urban growth areas, limited areas of more intense rural development or LAMRDs, and the rural commercial and rural industrial zones. The project will address housing equity and diversity. So by encouraging a wide array of housing product types within various urban and LAMRD zones, including addressing gaps in land use categories and definitions. The project also encourages economic development by scaling land uses to streamline the level of land use permit review required, and adding new land uses based on projects that have been submitted to the department and a comparison of other jurisdictions. And finally, the code will address improved predictability and ease of use for applicants and reviewers by adding, repealing, and revising definitions, restructuring the footnote requirements into a new chapter to reduce surprises, in addition to modifying the allowed use tables by adding quick links, in addition to transferring categorical uses from other areas of code to the allowed use tables. I wanted to mention that this project does not revise the comprehensive plan goals and policies. It also does not revise development regulations or requirements in Title 17 related to allowed density and zone purposes. And it also does not affect vested projects or permits as part of this update process. So to kick us off, we wanted to start by focusing on the topic areas associated with economic development. So as we've mentioned in previous work study sessions and briefings with the Planning Commission, one of the goals of this project is to allow uses and to streamline and where feasible, reduce the level of land use review based on project scale. So you'll see that we've integrated select small-scale commercial uses in residential zones to help reduce vehicle miles traveled, in addition to increase walkability in our neighborhoods while also maintaining neighborhood compatibility. And we've also looked at proposals to remove the required residential component for commercial uses in residential zones. So again, allowing limited commercial development within residential areas if it meets certain criteria. We also received some feedback during the development of the code amendments related to public facilities and the need to help encourage those facilities and investments in public infrastructure, both in urban growth areas and outside of urban growth areas. So as part of discussions with the Board of County Commissioners, they did authorize a reduced level of permit review and consideration for small scale facilities as part of this proposal, to help increase predictability. There's been some consistent standards developed for those small scale facilities consistent with previous reviews conducted. In addition to reviewing based on the size, which typically smaller scale public infrastructure improvements such as broadband nodes or pump stations typically do not exceed 300 square feet in size. And so that is the sizing threshold that's been recommended as part of this update process. Again, this is to help encourage investment in public infrastructure such as broadband and other necessary infrastructure to serve our communities. So before I move on to the other topic areas, I wanted to give the Planning Commission an opportunity to ask any specific questions that you may have on these two areas related to the economic development and anything you'd like to dive deeper into as you review this proposal. And I'm going to ask that on every slide as we move forward.
No? See any burning bushes here, so okay. I guess we can move to the next.
All right. So the next considerations are really around kind of the organization and scaling of land uses found within the draft proposal. So there are recommendations to combined land uses to help reduce redundancy in code. One example that comes to mind is there used to be, or there still is in code, a proposed category for arts and crafts stores. But then we also have a retail establishment, which is scaled by size. So as part of this proposal, those uses are combined into one rather than splitting them out into separate categories. And that's just based on the type of activities that would typically be associated with both facilities and then allowing for the scaling based on the size of the building that would be proposed. In addition, we've added new land uses and development standards associated with those new uses where necessary. So these are based on project proposals that the department has seen or a review of neighboring jurisdictions. So things like event facilities, resorts, are a couple, maker spaces is another example. Again, just to provide more opportunities to support different economies and different types of uses within our community. And this also helps to reduce the need for interpretation and provides predictability during the permit review process because where new development standards have been added, it does afford some predictability for the applicant and neighbors to that proposal in terms of what could be expected to occur as a result of that development activity. And kind of opposite of combining land uses, you'll see in certain areas where we split land use categories based on the scale and size of the facility. So public facilities we just discussed is one example. We also talked at the last work study session about schools. In addition to research facilities, is another example of scaling uses. And this is a direct response to some of the feedback we received during the development of the proposed changes that really hit on the need for scale as more of an appropriate measure for the level of land use permit review required in certain neighborhoods versus the activity itself. So it's more so about the size of the structure that's being proposed. So any questions on combining, adding, or splitting new land use categories?
So on the new, please, Chairman.
No, I was just saying, it looks like we're good to go on next slide, but if you have something to add.
Just for the increased in kind of development standards, when there is a new use that's never been proposed or included before, especially when it crosses urban versus rural, you will see different standards being set up. So for example, event facilities, you'll definitely see special provisions located in the draft to help balance the nuance between what is an urban area versus a rural area and expectations on specifically for rural lands, balancing rural lifestyles, but also the desire to have rural economies as well and have some predictability when it comes to those neighboring as well as landowners in the area as well.
Okay.
All right, so Angie, I'm gonna ask you to take this next slide, if you don't mind, on park zone.
Certainly. So part of Kitsap County's Department of Parks, they have close to 11,000 acres within their ownership, ranging in a variety of different sizes and locations in neighborhoods and communities. Some of our biggest park holdings include what they refer to as heritage parks, which include Port Gamble, Banner Forest, Newberry Hill Heritage Park, North Kitsap Heritage Park, just to walk down, as well as the Illihi Heritage Park located in the Central Kitsap UGA. One of the considerations as part of any kind of looking at what you can and cannot do on public lands is what options are available as part of that. But also at that macro level, where is it appropriate, but where is it not appropriate? When you're considering 11,000 acres, there's a lot of different unique circumstances. One being how we acquired the property. Oftentimes when we acquire parkland for public purposes with use of public funds from federal and state agencies, they come with title or deed restrictions and identifying what you can and cannot do in a very lengthy process to actually change that at the state level to allow that. So for example, in previous park leadership, but now we have some new faces in the parks department, we took a look at the park zone and walked use by use, as well as utilized efforts as part of the Port Gamble visioning and stewardship master planning for that area and park system. What uses may be appropriate in that Port Gamble setting but may not be appropriate elsewhere. So that kind of draft proposal that you see is trying to balance some of those future considerations when it comes to operations, but with the understanding that any changes to those parks do still have to go through public process, as well as whether we can or cannot do that based upon the deed of the property itself. So the Parks Department does have a Parks Advisory Board to help facilitate those operational as well as future land acquisition discussions. And also we do have a real estate code that has very specific steps for leasing of public lands, including parks, and what can and cannot occur from a public-private partnership standpoint. One of the challenges related to the park zone in this discussion, again, thinking 11,000 acres, is it appropriate everywhere? And I definitely could probably pick out examples. Some of the uses may not be appropriate, but they may be appropriate at the Kitsap Fairgrounds complex in Central Kitsap or something of that nature. So one of the third goals of this effort is kind of ease of use. And part of that is to clarify or add definitions as well as relocate use tables. So when it comes to the definition front, again, reduce the need for interpretation of what that means as part of application review. That provides more predictability for the applicant as well as the reviewer moving forward because it's clearly spelled out in code and here's the sideboards. So part of this draft proposal included 88 new definitions that were never in code, revised 48 of those existing definitions and removes seven of those. As part of the relocation of use table footnote. So I will fully admit on record, on recording, that I was one of the first one of two staffs that proposed footnotes in the use table back in 2006. I will say the footnotes probably didn't mass more than 20 at that time. And we have how many currently footnotes do we have today, Liz?
I think it's like 114.
Okay. So the intent of the footnotes have definitely expanded over the years and provides kind of, if you ever look at our use table, there's like one or 57 or 138. What does that mean? And you have to relocate to another section of code to understand whether or not that particular footnote applies to your project. So part of application review, you get a lot of surprises on what that may mean. So part of this is to relocate that to a special use provision section, which clearly delineates what uses or what footnotes or special use provisions apply to a particular zone or not, and how that's a little bit more organized and hyperlinked into the use table itself. And also hyperlinking as part of the draft proposal of definitions. So before, they're in completely different chapters, but if you open that just one chapter in code about allowed use tables, you can quickly by link go to definitions, but also those sideboard parameters to help improve that predictability. And last but not least, a number of elements also include transferring uses from other sections of code. So I'll just speak off the top of my head. That was the marijuana chapter. That's also transitory accommodations, wireless code facilities, all separate code updates that have specific allowed uses, but also provisions for those facilities located in separate chapters, but never referenced back to the allowed use table. So from a reviewer standpoint, when we're onboarding or training new staff or a new applicant or even a frequent customer, it is very hard to track down every piece. So if you go to one section of the code, that easily helps you navigate not only the allowed use, but where to find more information. And then part of previous updates to this planning commission, one of the reasons why we were delayed in moving this project forward was the Port Gamble redevelopment plan. So last year, this body, as well as the Board of County Commissioners, ultimately adopted revisions to the Port Gamble allowed uses and other provisions in code itself. That was adopted by the board in April of 2020.
Yep.
As part of kind of our efforts, we didn't want to undo a lot of the hard work that was negotiated through with the landowner, as well as the Port Gamble Sklallam Tribe, Suquamish Tribe of that effort. So kind of the compromise and to respect moving some new considerations forward, some new reorganizations moving forward, a separate appendix for the Port Gamble limited area of more intensive rural development or LAMRID and related regulations were moved to an appendix to solidify those previous negotiations, as well as agreements and adoption of code revisions.
All right, that brings us back to housing equity and diversity. So at the previous work study session, we talked a lot about diversifying the allowed use types or housing use types across various zones to allow for a mixing consistent with state law, our comprehensive plan goals and policies, in addition to the zone intent statements and allowed densities across various zones. Again, this is really to allow for flexibility for builders and property owners to respond to the market demand and construct a variety of housing types, which we learned with the Buildable Lands Report is something we need to continue to encourage investment in moving forward. In addition, we have identified a few new use categories, for example, manufactured mobile home RV park model tiny home park is one new category that would allow for long-term stays with alternative housing types. In addition to taking a look at updating a new category for group living based on the number of rooms that would be proposed associated with that development. And we have received some initial feedback from the Planning Commission on specifically the group living facilities. But again, wanted to mention that there are other categories that have been added, such as the manufactured mobile home park use as well. And then in addition to diversifying the types of products, aligning the permissibility with the zone purpose and intent, again, looking to reduce the level of land use review for housing products as appropriate across various zones and establish a clear and predictable process by which those are reviewed for both applicants and reviewers. We spoke a little bit last time about revisions to the urban accessory dwelling unit standards, again, to increase flexibility and encourage investment within those urban growth areas. As you saw with the buildable lands report, we are seeing less accessory dwelling units constructed than in urban areas than we are in rural. So this is one measure that can be taken to further encourage that housing product type. And then finally, applying multifamily housing standards uniformly. Again, currently these standards are only applied to certain zones, but to help encourage and increase predictability of requirements, the same standards would apply in all zones for multi-housing development. In addition to reducing the level of permit review for multi-family housing to help speed up the permit review process and ensure compatibility with dissimilar adjoining uses. There are no changes to rural housing density standards or to vacation rentals as part of this update process, as we've mentioned, that is outside of the scope of this particular update. So before I move on to project process, I just want to make sure there weren't any specific questions from the Planning Commission as you dive deeper into your review of the proposed changes. We are scheduled, which we'll talk about here in just a minute, for your public hearing on September 21st, and we'll hear testimony at that meeting for folks that are interested in participating. In addition to, we'll be hosting our second virtual meeting on September 16th, so next week Thursday at 5:30 p.m. And information for that meeting is available on the project website. And we are planning to do another gov delivery announcement just so folks are informed about that virtual meeting opportunity in addition to the public hearing on the 21st. And then once we conclude the hearing, the department is prepared to respond to public comments in ahead of your deliberation sessions, which will begin in October. And we're looking to receive a recommendation and findings of fact from the Planning Commission no later than the end of December this year. But if we're able to slide this project off your plate sooner, we're happy to continue to move this forward for your formal recommendation. Once we're through the Planning Commission public review and consideration, then we'll move forward with the Board of County Commissioners public process, which is scheduled very similarly to the process with the Planning Commission, with a public comment period. We'll be hosting virtual meetings and updates ahead of the hearing with the board, and looking for formal adoption by the end of March of 2022. So I know I asked if there were any questions and then I launched into a deep discussion, so apologize on that, but happy to answer those.
Commissioner Bean.
How do you define equity and what metrics do you use to measure it? And are we setting up a whole program for that? What are we doing with this equity thing?
Sure. So as we've mentioned at previous briefings, the Growth Management Act does require and encourage cities to include an incentive or to provide and promote housing for all income types. And so that is really what the equity piece is speaking to here.
That's not what the common public thinks equity means.
Okay. Okay.
All the way back to repatriation and reparations. How are we defining it for this county?
Trying to provide economic housing choices for all economic segments of the community.
Why is that equity? That's equality.
Is it not looking at fairness of all, regardless of your financial circumstances, as part of the Growth Management Act requirement?
I'm just trying to get a definition here. And then how are we going to measure it?
Well, part of the measurement of housing is also included as part of the Bilba Lands report. So we just received a briefing of not only the development trends for both urban and rural, including the different housing permits that come per zone itself. So at the end of the day, part of the reasonable measures consideration is trying to improve those consistencies between what the comprehensive plan asks for, not only at achieved densities, but also the type of densities and the types of zoning we should be seeing in our various UGAs in the rural area, but also part of the Growth Management Act and the requirements of the housing element.
Nice words. How do we measure it?
I think I mentioned that the measurement stick as part of growth management is the Bilba Lands report, which is issued and have to review a few years after every major comprehensive plan periodic update.
I disagree. I don't think you're defining it, but I'll leave it there.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments, questions? Commissioner Clayton Bourne, Calton Bourne, sorry.
Okay. For the home businesses, there look like there's three different levels now. For the moderate and minor, it said there could be parking required, more offsite parking. How are you going to decide which ones will and will not need more parking?
That's typically reviewed at the project level based on the proposal that is submitted. And so taking a look at in the development standards, I know there's requirements around like the number of employees, number of trips that might be required to the site. And so those are some of the considerations that come into play there, but are certainly open to additional suggestions on how to clarify that as part of your deliberations moving forward. In addition to, you know, future amendments to just the home business code in general, I know that is something that potentially could happen in the future, again, to help support those particular uses across the county. But it's typically done at the project level.
I did have a couple other questions. Could you give me an example of what a performance-based development would be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so performance-based development are typically those that would require some type of modification to the standards outlined in code. And there are certain types of I don't want to say the word is variance, but deviations from kind of the baseline as it relates to height or site coverage that would be considered as part of a performance-based development review. So it's kind of a separate and additional process that an applicant would go through to have considerations associated with their particular use in general, and then allow for deviations from the code, and they would be conditioned to that specific use, but not universal across every future development that would be consistent with that one. So it's very unique to the proposal that's been proposed before the department.
Okay, thank you. Then my last question has to do with self-storage. And I guess it's kind of two parts. A lot of the municipalities now are making it harder for storage to be developed. And it looks like the county is expanding its opportunities with you, including commercial. And there was one section that actually allowed it in rural residential if it only served the people or the units. So I guess I want some clarification on how that would work. In some instances, they'll build it in the bottom of a tall apartment building. You know, it's only for those people. How does it work in a more rural area like this?
Yeah, typically, and I don't know, Angie, if you have any specific examples of rural, self-storage facilities, but I believe that's an existing requirement that we do have in code today. And again, it's really intended, rural areas are supposed to serve the rural populations and communities around them. They're not intended for, use by folks that do not live within those particular communities. So that's really what that is speaking to. And the proposal also does allow for storage if it's associated in urban areas with a residential plat development or some type of commercial development as well. And again, it's to serve the folks that are within that particular platted development. And it would be reviewed at the same time as that proposal for the plat in order to receive the permitting to move forward to construction. So that's one way that it would be evaluated at the project level in conjunction with a plat or subdivision request.
So is it more just a way to keep the storage facilities smaller instead of these huge facilities? Or I mean, would it be, you know, like the 500 people that live around there, the only people that can rent there? Like, how would you kind of track that?
Yeah, it does present an enforcement, you know, issue potentially. But I think it's really intending to meet the purpose and intents of those zones, which is really to serve the local residents. And in the urban areas as well, as I said, it would be reviewed as part of that plat request. And so there would be, you know, restrictions placed upon that future establishment that would limit it to those that live within the subdivision that's being proposed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Have we reached the end of this presentation?
I think I just have a couple of slides on upcoming and or recent and upcoming outreach and then next steps. So just like we have with previous briefings with the Planning Commission, just want you all to know that we have been working and have received requests from folks that are interested in learning more about this process. So in the last month or so, we did initiate the public comment period with the release of this draft proposal on the 20th of August. We've met with the Port of Kingston. They've requested consultations as it relates to their property and specifically in the Kingston area. Tonight, we are hosting the second work study session. We're scheduled on Friday to have another follow-up consultation with the Port of Kingston. And the Kitsap Building Association has also requested a consultation, which is scheduled for September 14th. I already mentioned that we'll have our second virtual meeting on September 16th at 5:30. Information for that is on the project website if folks are interested. And we will be doing another gov delivery blast. And currently the 30-day written public comment period does end on September 21st. We've indicated previously to the Planning Commission that if there's interest to extend that beyond the public hearing, we would recommend that a written public comment period extension conclude on September 24th to allow the department to prepare responses in preparation for your deliberations in October. But that would require a motion by the Planning Commission the evening of the public hearing on the 21st to extend the written comment period, should you choose to do so. Joe, you look like you have a question.
Well, I question whether we could actually extend that period at this meeting without having to wait for the 21st. I think our parliamentarian could enlighten us on that.
Well, I think that this has not been noticed as a public hearing. So I think that you probably need to wait and make that motion when it's been noticed as a public hearing, so people would have the option to, you're making a change to that at a properly noticed public hearing. So I think you should wait to do at that.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Commissioner Bean.
Is there a chance you can publish these slides?
Yep, we can get these over to Amanda and she will get them uploaded on the Planning Commission's website.
Thank you.
Okay, and Commissioner Lyason.
In regard to the public hearing, obviously we don't know who all is going to be there. And in recent public hearings, we've had a lot of written testimony, which is helpful and we encourage it. But perhaps the commission could consider the evening of the hearing, depending on the number of people testifying, that we could go above our guidelines and perhaps go as long as 5 minutes, just because of the types of topics we're addressing. Obviously, if we have a lot of people that want to participate, we'd have to go to our normal, whether it's 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
Just something to keep in mind that the chairperson and the commission could consider the evening of the public hearing.
Right.
Thanks.
And I'll plug the town meeting or public meeting on the 16th. It's really good to listen into that. You get a sense of where people are thinking, what they're thinking of the code. It kind of gives us a heads up in that. Any other questions, comments? Nope. Okay. So, is that complete, that agenda item?
Yes. Thank you, commissioners, for your time. Appreciate it this evening.
All right. We are now on agenda item H, our second general public comment period. We open the floor up to the general public for any comments they may have at this time. All right. No comments or requests, so we will close that period. And now we are on item I for the good of the order or commissioners' comments. Do we have any comments, questions? Commissioner Mull.
Yeah, can we talk about chat during the online meetings really quickly? I noticed there's been a lot of chat happening today, and I feel like it might be good to clarify whether that's technically allowed, whether it goes in the record. I know for myself, I can't read chat and listen to what somebody's presenting about at the same time, so I end up either, you know, completely missing what the presenter is talking about or just ignoring the chat, which is probably not productive. I don't know. I guess I feel like maybe we should decide whether to allow chat or not and kind of like move on that in some way. Do others have thoughts about that?
Okay. Commissioner Beam.
I think any form of communication should be encouraged. The question is, do we record it? And Zoom gives you that at the end. The question is, do we have somebody watching it to make sure that everybody gets accommodated?
Okay. I
would ask.
Go ahead, Commissioner Murphy.
I would also ask just what is, as we've moved to Zoom and virtual and then eventually hopefully hybrid or something to that effect, what is protocol at DCD with regard to Commissioner Mall's questions? And then is there also a way to potentially, based on also Commissioner Mall's comment, there are periods of time probably during the meeting that is not productive, no different than somebody couldn't raise their hand or speak during a presentation, should the chat be in fact disabled during times when public comment would not be allowed, just timing wise.
Okay. I would point out to everyone that these were work studies specifically for the Planning Commission to concentrate on what the proposals are, what is being considered, and ask questions and that. In the chat, it's like, you know, virtual, if we were in session in live, we wouldn't be accepting questions from the audience at that point. We did grant the audience two general public comment periods in our meetings to help us hear from the audience. I believe the staff has been very good about noticing what the chat has been and accepting the ideas and responding, but we're kind of mixing public hearing and a work study.
So could I ask again the protocol at DCD currently?
Okay, go ahead.
So part of most public meeting settings for Zoom, whether that's the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, the Board of County Commissioners, they even during their regular business meetings on Monday night, the commissioners respond to chat. So it's kind of a double duty. But part of that is sharing information where you can get it, where you can get more information or responding to questions easily. But prior to COVID, oftentimes those were brought up, as Commissioner Chairman Phillips mentioned, during the public comment periods of that. I would, as part of the Q&A back and forth during work study sessions or status updates, it's not supposed to be this back and forth briefing itself, but if a question can be easily answered through chat to help garner and have folks have the ability to provide feedback during a public hearing or their written testimony, we knock out some of those questions and that helps inform their comment. I'm happy to do that as much as we can and bring that up during our presentations as we monitor. This new hybrid virtual world has us all juggling multiple tasks, and we can talk about the rollout of a hybrid meeting format and some testing that the board will be doing. And also, it's going to be different. I don't say we got some training last week of some new things that they implemented in the chamber's office, and the in-person versus the hybrid is definitely very, very different, including if someone comes to the podium, their back is actually to the dais and looking to the big screen towards the audience and the camera itself. So it's a very different dynamic than what we're very used to. And also have to say, instead of one person manning meetings, we are anticipating two people of manning meetings because of the different platforms we need to monitor at all times. Whether that continues after we get this under our belt, more to come there, but we can talk more specifically about the hybrid meeting format that the board's gonna attempt to do again on, I think at their September 13th meeting, but Amanda can correct me if I'm wrong there.
Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, oh.
No, please. I was actually going
to
refer to Ms. Walston anyway.
I was just going to kind of sum up basically what Angie said too, in that I would say the interaction, I think, is more kind of more on the technical side for staff, in that, you know, if we have extra staff or if we have staff that can readily answer questions that come in, it's kind of more like a technical assistance, or if we can, like we said, answer questions or field questions on the side that will be helpful. But I don't think it's an expectation or should be expected that the planning commissioners should be interacting and answering questions, fielding things in the chat, or you don't even have to really, I don't think, be monitoring that. That's more of a, you know, a side bit. And just like Chair Phillips said, you wouldn't be fielding questions tossed out from the audience. We wouldn't be expecting that in that kind of a setup. However, if someone from the audience came and or the public came and had a question for me on the side, you know, a staff member would try and assist them, just like we would try and assist a member of the planning commission. If you had a question, came and said, you have a copy of this document that they're looking at, or I can't find this page or something like that, we would try and assist you either way. So kind of for the staff to manage that on the side, that's kind of, I think, where that lives.
So for this evening, could we leave that as at staff discretion? Obviously, I'm sure you guys have already probably internally joked that Robert's Rules of Orders were not written with Zoom. So at the time of their writing, So I'm sure that you are working through that, and we just appreciate that you were. And I'd also point out, since we're discussing chat, that Ms. Martha Burke actually really appreciated that Angie was able to provide clarification during the meeting. So that is good for public participation. And so I'm sure with anything else, and this included, hybrid will involve some learning and all of our best efforts. So thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that sounds great, as long as staff is comfortable handling it. And if someone, you know, if it's something that we need to know, if somebody calls it out, so I don't miss anything by my inability to multitask, that'd be great.
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of, you know, it's relaying a question, you know, well, Planning Commission, this person wants to know this answer, but it's a matter of, you know, like I said, providing information back and forth if we can answer and do, you know, provide assistance in that manner. I think that's the level that we're all trying to achieve. Did you have something, Stephen?
I was just going to say kind of what Aaron just said. I thought, Angie, your responses were perfect and handled really well there. So thank you very much for that.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order or comments? Commissioner Beam.
When are we going to go back to real meetings?
Good question.
I wouldn't say normal anytime soon, but Amanda, is this a good time, Chairman, to launch out some of the hybrid stuff that we've been working on along with the Board of County Commissioner's office?
Sure. Question's been asked. If we can answer it.
Sure. We did have another technical meeting where we had our vendors come back, and our IS department worked this last week to work out some bugs with BCAT also. And we have actually this Friday another test run. And then the Board of County Commissioners is having another run on for their regular meeting on Monday. So everybody think good thoughts, and hopefully that one goes well. However, we are going to wait until we have a couple successful meetings under our belt, because as you know, after hours, there is no IS team on standby. So we're going to wait until they've got a couple of them that are run successfully before we try and tack that on our own. So I would say that Planning Commission isn't going to do any kind of hybrid meetings until probably the second meeting in October is anticipated as our first. If everything goes smoothly, tip top, best case scenario, maybe the second meeting in October would be when Planning Commission would probably go.
And that will still be in a hybrid format, Amanda, so that won't be everybody in the chambers like it was pre-COVID. A lot of folks will be coming and patching in via Zoom. Staff will likely still be patching in via Zoom. I think in chambers, I committed to Amanda, I would not abandon her in this new technology rollout. So I think in the chambers, it will be Amanda and myself manning both not only the Zoom feature itself, but a new a software application when it comes to presenting and all that stuff. So really, so far, it's looking like you need two folks to really cover the bases and make sure that it's running as smooth as possible.
Or if Commissioner Beam can solve the Delta variant, that would also, you know.
Tall order.
And so for you all attended the joint meeting with the county commissioners too. So that was held in the Port Blakely room, but the way that worked with some people up on the screen, some people in the office, it's similar to that, but it'll be in the commissioner's chambers too. So it'll be that format is what we're looking at, but even more sporadic because we'll have some people on site, some people in the building, some people, it'll be spread out and even more screens actually, so.
Right.
And what's really awkward about the setup is, again, because of the video feed to get folks that are virtually logging in, the dais, again, where we go to the podium, it's been switched around and we're looking at the audience and the camera versus looking at the dais as previously before. So it's definitely a different dynamic. So anybody that is planning to attend a planning commission and sit at the dais again, our backs will be turned to you when we present.
Okay. Commissioner Lyason.
I wanted to note, this is my first public meeting outdoors. It's been an interesting experiment. The animals have converged and decided that I'm violating their zoning codes. If you've noticed me looking around, no, I'm not looking at flying saucers or UFOs. They've converged over the cedar tree and the plum tree, and the code compliance officers are dropping plums and acorns at me right now. So it's probably about a good time to adjourn and get out of their habitat.
Is that a motion to adjourn, Commissioner Eliza?
No move.
Before we get to that, I'd like to just say one statement about this. I hope everybody on the Planning Commission, especially the members that were there last year when we had the Dickey Pitt discussion and that, and kind of changed directions on that. I hope everybody is aware of that, and that it was a very good move for the Planning Commission, and that, and I think everybody needs to be congratulated on considering that and kind of changing the direction that the Dickey Pitt went in. Okay, any other comments? Okay, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Commissioner Eliza, in a second?
By the squirrels, yeah. No, Aaron. Yep.
Okay. All right. All those in favor of adjourning the meeting tonight, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye. Aye.
It's unanimous. Okay. All right. Till the 21st.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.